Good afternoon, and welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn on KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. It's another sunny and cold Friday. We're kind of getting used to these, aren't we, Mom?
Well, now let's not go all the way to getting used to. But this is Iowa, and, of course, I grew up in Iowa and lived here most of my life, so I guess I'm used to it.
Yeah, I thought you always kind of liked cold weather.
I don't mind it. If I have a warm coat and if I didn't have to go anywhere, I'd really like it.
Well, that's like my partner, Margie, who's Finnish, Margie Wood, and my business partner. Her, I think she said it was her grandmother, used to say, there's no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing.
Well, you know, that had, so I have a very warm coat, thank God, and I really enjoy wearing it because it's so nice and warm.
Well, Writers' Voices is the show where we talk about and to writers, about books, about publishing, about anything to do with the world of books. And I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and my co-host is my mother, Carolyn Kilborn.
And we, I'm just moving into a different house and going to have a library, and Monica was helping me with it the other day. And
you should see those books.
You should see those books, right. I have books on everything.
It was kind of fun organizing them, though.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Well, our guest today is my good friend, Hillary Kurtz, who most of you probably are familiar with as the editor and publisher of the Fairfield Weekly Reader. Hillary is also a writer, has written, of course, many things that have been published in the Reader, but she has done a lot of writing of various types. I was going to ask her what her favorite type of writing is, but she didn't seem to want to answer that question. So hello, Hillary.
The writing I do in private.
And you write every day?
Actually, I enjoy writing in groups, and it brings out something that you'll never get when you're trying to intentionally sit down and write about something. In a group, you're given a topic. You're just allowed to let yourself go, and sharing it with everyone in the group just brings great mutual support and sometimes admiration. So
and ideas.
Definitely ideas, you know, and we're not mushy with each other. We definitely get down to brass tacks.
So, Hillary, do you have a writer's group that you've been a part of for a long time?
I, on and off, have been in writer's groups and not currently enrolled. Right now I'm trying radio.
That's right, and today is actually Hillary's radio debut. So welcome, Hillary, to the world of radio. It's a lot easier than it looks.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Good, maybe I won't have a dry mouth after all.
Yeah. The hard part is actually all the switches and the buttons over here. That was a little intimidating to me at first.
Mm-hmm. But Monica's got it down now. I let her do that. She's the engineer person.
So when Hillary and I first started talking about her coming on the show, I was actually trying to get her to come and talk about being the editor and publisher of a local weekly and what that was like, you know, having to edit writers who are mostly your friends and acquaintances, and isn't that more difficult than if it were strangers, and the pressure of being under deadline every single week of the year.
Yeah.
But instead, we decided to do a lighter topic.
We can do that a later time.
That's true.
We can.
And because of this being the week of Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. and because Hillary has had a long and very deep interest in the sociology of relationships, we decided to do a show on relationship books.
Of which there are many.
Yeah. We're going to be focusing on one of the books, one particular relationship book that was written by a local author. It's called Inspired Dating by Hartley Bishop. Hartley was not able to be here with us, but I did have the opportunity to interview her last week, and so I'll be speaking on her behalf occasionally as we get into it. But the first question is, why so many relationship books? What do you think, Hillary?
Why, indeed. Oh, pop quiz question. I'm not a professional, but I would say that, the world has changed immensely from the day that our parents were dating and they had very little to go on. And I think Carolyn is already shaking her head yes.
Yeah, that's true. There were no books out there when, you know.
So, you know, whether the books create the need or the need creates the books, who's to say, but they're here and we're all addressing it. And the fact that, you know, we're dating younger, the variety of dating decisions has, you know, mushroomed.
And the second time around, as the divorce rate rose in the second time around for dating, the whole thing.
You know, I asked Hartley Bishop why she thought there were so many relationship books, and she gave two reasons. One is that everyone loves love, especially during Valentine's season, and most people dream of finding romantic love. And the second one is there's a big market for them. She said love and romance are always popular, and it's not going to grow old with time, but keeps renewing from age to age. Books on this topic speak to the core of the human being's desire for intimate connection with life. But while that may be true, I'm not sure that the type of book that we have now, which is that we're discussing today, that is so prevalent, relationship advice books, I'm not sure if they've always been that available. And you just said, Mom, that
no.
You don't remember.
I don't remember. Well, I never read any, but I don't know that. Of course, my personality is it's kind of go with the flow. So, you know, when I met your dad and so forth, I mean, of course, what was expected in my day was that you would get married.
Right.
And raise a family. I graduated in 53. And while there were some girls in my class who became doctors and so forth, they also married. We just had our 50th reunion not too long ago, and in 2003, and most of the gals were still married, you know.
To their high school sweethearts?
Some of them.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you met Dad when you were in college.
Right.
And it's actually kind of an interesting story about how the two of you met. I don't know if any relationship book would advise you to do what you did.
Probably not.
What did you do?
Well, I was in this acting class at the University of Iowa, and this gentleman was also in it. His name's Dan Isaacson. And he had been my future husband's roommate at Cornell. He was doing graduate work at Iowa. Dan was, and John was in the service at that time. So he asked me if I would write to this friend of his in the service, and I thought, well, I'm writing to a couple other guys from home in the service, so I guess it wouldn't hurt. So I started writing to him, and so then, you know, we got later got met, and then got engaged, and then got married.
And the engagement came after you had actually met once or twice?
Twice.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, it is.
So no questioning. You both knew.
Well, I mean, you know, we wrote a lot of letters, of course. I wrote to him every day. He didn't write to me every day, but I wrote to him every day. But, we had the same values. You know, mm-hmm. that's the key to me. That was the truth after John died. And my second husband, we had the same values, and that was what was key for me.
Now, when you were writing to him every day, were you still writing to the other guys every day, too?
Oh, no, because they were just friends. They were not boyfriends at all. They were just friends. And no, they fell by the wayside.
Poor guys. They lost out.
Yeah.
The fact that your mom took a chance right off, I mean, that sort of playful, open attitude towards finding love, it has almost been lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone feels so much trepidation now, and I know we're going to get into more about inspired dating, but I think I was inspired by the approach Hartley Bishop has in her book, that you treat it as if it was, you
fun.
Know, something fun, something good in your life,
mm-hmm.
and something that you could plan and control, and I'm jumping ahead and I'm drawing a parallel with Dr. Paul, who we will also mention later, and his point of view is, you can call it a game, but games are fun, you know, and men like games, women like games, just, you know, play
well,
fair.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned about being in control, and with the world out of control as it seems to be, if you have a little bit of control of your own life, your own relationships, that's, you know, that's great, really.
We looked up the history of bestseller books. There's a place online where I found the top 10 best-selling books of every year from 1900 to 1999.
Oh, my goodness. They'll hit everything on the Internet, don't they?
I love the Internet. So I was looking for trends in relationship books, and what we found was I started looking in the 1930s, and the closest thing that I found in the whole decade of the 1930s of the top 10 nonfiction books was Marjorie Hillis' Live Alone and Like It.
Okay.
So, I don't know. That might be an anti-relationship.
What inspired that?
Well, you know, in the 30s and 40s, there were a lot of, in some school districts, you couldn't be married and be a teacher.
Oh, that's true.
So there were a lot of teachers who were not married.
What?
Yeah.
What's the reasoning behind that? Do you
who
know,
knows?
Carolyn?
Who knows? There was several of my high school teachers were older women who were unmarried and had been teachers for years and years and years. And, you know.
Well, there were a lot of jobs that women could not have if they were married. My grandmother, your mother, had a job at Maytag, I believe.
Well, that was during the war.
During the war, married.
No, during the Depression.
During the Depression, married, had to keep her job, her marriage a secret in order to keep her job.
Yeah. She couldn't be married and have a job because the Depression, they figured that, you know, one
job per family.
Yeah.
So in the 1940s, I found a few self-help books, kind of, you know, how to live better, but nothing that was really relationship advice. In the 1950s was the first one that I would really consider a relationship advice book, was called Love or Perish by Smiley Blanton, M.D. And, you know, when I saw that title, I thought, okay, this could be a relationship book, but it might not. But it turned out that it really was, and it was based on Freudian theory, and it kind of was like a 12-step program of help yourself advice about how to be lovable. You know, some of the advice that he gave was, to be lovable, you must be a good parent, concerned for the welfare of others, as well as a good child, someone who has put aside the habit of using hate to achieve goals. Have faith in a universal power greater than man's. Accept your own aggressive impulses, redirecting them into constructive channels. Remember that happiness comes from within you. And the 12th step was, acknowledge openly that you and others need and want love. Another bestseller in the 1950s.
Those were good
yeah.
things.
Yeah. I think it sounds like it was probably written from a fairly academic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not all the exclamation points that that we see in these books today. And then also Dear Abby was a popular bestseller in the 1950s, and of course...
You know, it occurs to me that Dear Abby was probably bridging a gap between the past and what was to be the future, because the past, women, as you said, the whole intention was to be married, and what do? Books on etiquette, books on cooking.
Yeah.
And Dear Abby was sort of a tread lightly, polite, but...
Crossover, yeah.
Getting mm-hmm. into some of the deeper topics.
Yeah, that really women wanted to discuss, wanted to know about, but, you know, there was one in the 70s then. I mean, there's, you know, been these, one of them in the 70s was everything you always wanted to know about sex was what was afraid to ask.
Right.
The
70s,
and that's true.
The 70s were very focused. There were a lot of what I would call relationship books in the 70s, and they were almost all about sex, or that was a very prevalent aspect of the books.
Hmm.
I have some of the other titles written down here somewhere, but I don't know where they are at the moment. That's, in the 60s, we had Sex and the Single Girl. So that was kind of the...
That's kind of the start.
And, of course, the Kinsey Reports had come out in the 50s. And, again, that was a very
academic perspective.
That's
right. They did.
But it made the subject available.
Mm-hmm.
It proved that people were interested in the subject because they were top 10 bestseller books, too.
Now, Sex and the Single Girl, that was Helen Gurley Brown's... book,
right.
And who became
the longtime editor?
Longtime editor of Cosmo.
Cosmopolitan. There's actually a book by the current editor of Cosmo that I picked up at the Iowa City Library a few months ago, called "How to Set His Thighs on Fire." But it was it really wasn't as focused on sex as the title made it sound. It was. Relationships, career advice.
Makes it sound like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, Monica, you lent me that book. There was some of that.
But career advice.
There was a chapter that was 2 pages long. Yeah. About something very specific.
But it was, I actually liked that particular book.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it had some useful advice and it was very readable. It was kind of, all the chapters were short.
Right.
And it was very
I noticed in your notes about Hartley Bishop's book, she said, it's worth reading a 200-page book, even if you get only one thing, one concept, one idea out of it.
Yeah.
And I would have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the 1980s, the only books that made the top 10 list that were relationship books were both by the same author, Leo Buscaglia, Living, Loving, and Learning, and Loving Each Other.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mentioned that was the one book I remember my mother actually purchased and had, you know, on her night table. That was what I would consider a self-help book. My parents did not do self-help books.
And then in the 90s, we started to see more the type of books that we have now. John Gray had several bestsellers in the 90s, and there were several others. And today... We have all a wide range of books available. So what are some of the most popular books here in Fairfield?
Okay, I spoke to Tony at 21st Century, and he said Inspired Dating has had, you know, good brusque sales. And by the way, the cover, front and back, is...
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And George Foster did the design.
Oh.
A local book designer, book cover designer.
Oh, yeah. The back is really magnificent because
yeah.
it's a full length of what the short in the front. Yeah, beautiful.
So Inspired Dating is selling very well at 21st Century. And Tony also mentioned the top sellers being Conscious Loving, The Journey to Co-Commitment by Gay Hendricks, Ph.D., and Kathleen Hendricks. And the other top seller there is His Needs, Her Needs, Building an Affair-Proof Marriage by Willard F. Harley, Jr., who also wrote another top seller, Love Busters, Overcoming Habits That Destroy Romantic Love. And the final book that Tony mentioned is He's Scared, She's Scared, Understanding the Hidden Fears That Sabotage Your Relationships by Stephen Carter and Julia Sokol. At Revelations, Freddie Fonseca pointed me to Inspired Dating and a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, called The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman, it is. I was surprised. It looked very elementary to me. Surprised that it would be a New York Times bestseller. And the subtitle of that book is How to Express Heartfelt Commitment to Your Mate. So this,
and what are the five love languages?
The five love languages are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. And I know various, you know, relationship gurus who have taken off on this idea or possibly preceded this idea. With, you know, depending on what type of person you are, what type of thing you most need.
So that each person has something that if they don't get, they don't feel loved, even if they're getting all the others. If you may be giving somebody all kinds of words of affirmation, but if they're the one who wants touch,
to be touched,
they don't feel loved.
They're not getting the message.
My brother and his wife took a workshop at their church on that some years ago, mm-hmm. and identified in each of their children what their language of love was. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me, Brian was telling mm-hmm. me about that. And he had one child for whom it was words of affirmation, another one it was touch, and I can't remember what the other one was, but it was different for each of his kids. And he identified what it was for him, too.
Well, there you go. I guess yeah. it's a bestseller for a reason.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Woke up to this idea.
Good. Yeah.
When I thought about it, though, I couldn't, it's like I need all of them.
Okay.
I could zero it down to one.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. You said it. Now
so,
we know.
Maybe I'm a little hard to please.
I don't think so. And then, of course, Johnny Gray has been on the bestseller list, as you mentioned, for several years. And maybe the book sales have dropped by now. But not only did he write Men Are for Mars, Women Are for Venus, wasn't there a follow-up book?
Well, there's Men and Mars and Venus on a Date, A Guide for Navigating the Five Stages of Dating to Create a Loving and Lasting Relationship, was published in 1999. And that's still, let's see, that's number 4 on Amazon's list of bestsellers.
You can of come all up, time or just?
Well, currently. I don't know how they do it. You can put in various keywords and narrow things down. So the keywords I had were mate-seeking relationships, romantic relationships. And I don't remember which order that went in, but that ended up number 4 on that list. Number 1, and I don't know if I can say this word or not, but number 1 was Why Men Love Witches with a B.
Oh.
Huh.
Okay.
Is that like why women like bad boys?
Well, the subtitle is From Doormat to Dream Girl, A Woman's Guide to Holding Her Own in a Relationship. And I think the point is that it's the point that this author is making is that men actually like women who will stand up for themselves and are attracted to that. They don't want a doormat.
Some men.
Some men do want doormats.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, there's nothing across the board, anything you mm-hmm. can say. It doesn't apply to everybody because everyone's different. And it's finding what that person that you aspire to, finding what that person is and what they like. And that's the whole thing.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Writers' Voices on KRUULP 100.1 FM, and our guest today is Hilary Kurtz. We're discussing relationship books, and I should have, said that a long time ago because I got kind of carried away with our conversation.
Well, there's so much stuff. There's so much information.
That's true.
Of course, now we have Internet dating, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, we could do a whole show just
yes.
on that,
yeah.
for sure.
And we have some tidbits to introduce towards the end of the show, right, Monica?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, see, I just jumped in. Yes. Sorry about that.
We have some good stuff.
But let's talk a little more about inspired dating.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Hilary, what was your first impression when you started reading this?
I felt soothed by it. I think that Hartley has a very unique approach in that she said it in her introduction that she is going to be, your favorite aunt. In fact, she said, she wrote it from quote, my heart to yours, as it would be from a loving aunt to a favorite niece, a mother to a daughter, a grandmother to a granddaughter. I give this information to you quietly. It is a secret. Also, it is the quiet of our hearts, yours and mine, when great things are imagined and start their journey to fulfillment, and love is a great thing. Now, that may sound a little what I would think of as sappy, but, sap has its use. I mean,
yeah.
Sap is the sweet
You're right.
Stuff of the tree. And I think Hartley was... I think she was very, very bold in not holding back her heart when she wrote this book. And that's the first thing that gets conveyed. And the message that mostly this, of course, this is for women, what every woman needs to know. I think this book intends to protect women, protect their mm-hmm. hearts, and give them the confidence that there's actually some very conscious plan that they can utilize to launch into their dating years.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she does say the book is for anyone from what age, 10 to 110.
So it doesn't have to be the frightening thing that some media portray it as.
Exactly.
Right.
But I think the idea of protection is has come up for a reason, you know, protecting your heart. And I just have to bring in Dr. Paul at this point,
okay.
who is becoming, you know, a very hot star on the more than pop psychology, I believe. You know, he's being featured in a lot of magazines, and he's got courses, and he's got a real strong presence online. He teaches a course called Mind OS, Operating System.
And does he have a book coming out soon?
He does have a book coming out, I believe, in the springtime, and I'll look that up in a moment. But he said one of the largest surveys of women's concerns in dating revealed that the top concern that women have in being in a single dating life is danger to themselves, whether to their body or to their emotions.
Right. I can understand that.
Do you think women felt that way back when you were dating?
No, they didn't. Uh-uh.
And why do you think it's different?
Well, I think the world is a scarier place now. There are more. I think there are more crimes against women. At least there's certainly more advertised. Maybe
more,
they were
more publicity.
More publicity. Maybe they were there, but they were not. You know.
You didn't talk.
Publicity.
People didn't talk about that.
People didn't talk about it, right.
I mean, we have a close family friend who was in an abusive marriage, you know, 30, 35 years ago, who has talked about that, how she was basically told by everybody to just shut up, to not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, now everybody, meaning her parents, her preacher, you know, anyone that she went to for help. And now that's not the case. Now it's much more out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
So does having
yeah,
these things
out
in the open
make us more
scared?
Yeah, I think Dear Abby helped that too. Helped bring that to the forefront too.
Yeah. Actually, I do want to, one of the things in my interview with Hartley that she really emphasized is that although she is reaching a lot of women in like 28 to 50 year old age group, she isn't reaching the book has not reached young people as much, and she really would like to be able to get to the younger women more. And one of the main reasons is to really emphasize the fact that if you are in a relationship with a man who is abusive to you in any way,
mm-hmm.
physically or emotionally, but particularly physically, if he touches you in anger, what she said is, you have nothing to think about. The relationship is over, and you get out as soon as you can. Don't think, well, maybe I can change him. Maybe this is, you know, there's all these good things about him. She said, no.
Yeah.
That's it. And she obviously feels very, very strongly about that and about getting that message across to women. I think a lot of times young women especially don't know that. They don't know to do that, and they can get involved in something that mushrooms into something that's really
you're right,
really difficult.
Especially if they grew up in an abusive home, because then they think this is the norm. And you know, they say that a lot, that you know, if you grow up in an abusive home, then that sometimes you're going to be an abuser because you think that's the normal behavior. And and I know back in my day, they, you know, it's something you didn't talk about.
Yeah,
it wasn't mentioned.
And the secret, this new video that's sweeping, that was just featured on Oprah.
Oh yeah.
Dr. Paul mentioned the concept that you then spend more of your energy and time and thoughts on what you want to avoid, and the idea being, if you do that, you're still attracting what you don't want instead of bringing on what you do want. So it's almost a retraining, and I think Hartley Bishop's book you know, very beautifully goes into kind of a, well, doesn't she have a chapter called Dream, You Beautiful Dreamer? she wants women to take the time to dream, not fantasize and disconnect from reality, but dream to project what they want to come true in their lives.
So dream their goals.
Dream your goals.
Right.
Dream the man that, you know, you feel would be most suitable in your life.
Uh-huh.
Now, Carolyn first saw this book, she opened it to a page and started reading something that, because I said, you know, this book is really beautifully written, and she started reading a passage. One of our guests on our show some time ago had said to, you know, I think it was Cheryl Fusco Johnson who said, when you're deciding whether to read a book or not, just open it anywhere, and if the first paragraph that you read draws you in, then you want to read the book.
Okay.
So this actually happened to be the beginning of the first chapter, but it is a beautiful.
As I write today, a mourning dove sits near the window and coos and calls with gentle, persistent strength, and then again with gentle, persistent strength. That's what it takes to find and create love. It takes gentle, persistent strength to be who you are in love and to let the one you love be free in the world of his own nature. You know, mourning dove, mate for life. But be free in the world of his own nature. And if his own nature is not something that you can feel comfortable with, then you need to move on.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And actually, further into the book, she emphasizes that women should not compromise their nature either.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they may have to bend their time when they get into a deeply committed relationship. But, you know, develop yourself.
Right. I remember speaking with her some years ago when she was talking about that a man will fall in love with the woman for who she is, and that's, you know, her strength and her independence and all these qualities. But very often the woman will lose those qualities in the marriage because they're trying to please the man. And they lose the very qualities that the man fell in love with in the first place.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
Complicated, isn't it?
I don't know, Mom. Maybe your way was better. Just don't think about it too much.
Yeah, well, you can overthink things. This is true.
That is true.
This is true. But, gosh, you know, I don't know.
But I do remember one of the things that you said about your second husband, when you met him, that the reason that he impressed you so much was because he was exactly who he was. He wasn't playing any games.
Right. No games.
Yeah.
And he was just the sweetest guy. And, you know.
And he continued being the sweetest guy for the next
18 years.
Right. Despite terrible health problems and pain.
You know, and once again, we had the same values.
Yeah.
Values of life, and that was a key.
Well, that is actually key to what Hartley, the process that she writes about, the principles that she writes about in selecting, in choosing a mate, are first you figure out what your values are, and she calls them, she has a name for them, high abstracts.
Your high abstracts.
And high abstracts are qualities like truth, honesty, peace, independence, intimacy, love, creativity, spontaneity. Determine which of those are really most important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's most of you've probably heard of eHarmony, which is one of the online dating sites that it was started by Neil Clark Warren, who has written quite a few relationship books, and I have a couple of them. And the eHarmony process, it's in that one you fill out this whole long questionnaire and then they match you up. And one of the things that they're matching, they have you talk about which things you must have in a relationship, which things you can't tolerate in a relationship. And you have to really think about which ones to pick. out of their list.
Well, this is when you're filling out your questionnaire.
When you're filling out your questionnaire.
Oh, yeah, so you have to really do some soul searching before you.
Right,
before the whole
and
thing.
then they try and match their members up on that basis, and also they have a whole set of criteria that they match mm-hmm. people up on, education, intelligence, you know, spiritual values. And again, it's in order to try and match people up based on having similar values. So there's different ways to go about it, but it does seem
When I was teaching sociology, there are statistics that usually men marry women younger than themselves, especially when you get to be my age or the 50s and on, then it's mm-hmm. more prevalent even mm-hmm. that men marry women younger. So I don't know why that is. Why is that? Does anybody know?
Well, there's an opposite trend now, too. There's one of the trends that we have there was by Gorgeous Grandmas. Do you remember seeing that
yes.
one?
Yes. Uh-huh. Now, we should say, do you want to
oh.
do a...
Okay. So we looked up some on Yahoo Personals.
Oh, okay.
That list
this
of trends.
This is something I looked up in the beginning of the year or... from Yahoo Personals, and they must have a lot of personals because they're devoting many, many, many pages of research here. And one of the places I clicked on was What's Ahead for Romance and Relationships in 2007. And I have 9 pages of commentary on this.
But yeah, we'll
GorgeousGrandma.com says in 2007 more gorgeous grandmas will be looking for serious relationships with younger men. And that's Alice Solomon. It can be a win-win situation for both. Solomon is a columnist, radio host, and author of Finding the Love of Your Life After 50.
And I've been told that there's been a lot of talk shows and so forth about this too, about the trend of older women with younger men. But
Of course, the thing is, men die earlier than women do.
Yeah.
That's what makes the...
That is part of what kind of makes
sense. It makes the void as far as men my age, mm-hmm. because, you know, a lot of them
True.
Are gone.
Well, Hillary had sent me earlier this year a statistics that she found about, I believe, more women are living... There are more single women than married women between, the ages of 18 on up in the country today... for the first time that's true, that there are more single women than married women. And part of that, and there are more single women than there are single men, and part of that is because of men mm-hmm. dying younger. But I've also, it did used to be true that women, that men tended to marry down, marry younger women, marry less powerful women, marry less educated women. But I think that trend is reversing also, I read recently.
Oh.
Yeah.
What I found, I don't remember the reference.
I know.
Yeah. That smart people marry smart people.
Yeah. And in fact, more educated women are more likely to be married than less educated women and more likely to stay married. That the divorce rate is higher among poorer and less educated couples.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Because we think of it sometimes as being the other way around, that people who have more opportunities are going to be more likely to get divorced, mm-hmm. but that doesn't turn out to be the case.
Right. It's actually a stabilizing factor.
Yeah.
And there's more, there's a career there, there's money there probably.
Stimulation.
Yeah. Intellectual stimulation.
Mm-hmm. You can afford to take separate vacations now and then if you need to.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something to there's a lot to be said for feeling like you have choices, and then you don't end up feeling forced into a situation, and you can make a situation work.
You can adjust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you feel like you don't have to be there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
But is there such a thing as too many choices?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
And what made you say that?
Just being the devil's advocate.
Now, in Inspired Dating, part of the process that Hartley Bishop asks women to do is to date many men.
That's right. She does.
Yeah. to date many men in order to choose the best one, and that can be many men at the same time.
And she made a beautiful point about when you are in a dating situation, any dating situation, that man does not owe you anything. You do not expect anything. You're not looking at him as if he was already supposed to fulfill all your dreams and desires. No, you're really being the observer.
And you do not owe him anything by the same token.
Yes, exactly. That's true.
Right.
That's true.
So, well, see, back in the day, you went with one person. You didn't date a lot of people. That's just the way it was. That's the way the culture was. At least in my town, mm-hmm. where I grew up, and, you know.
And I haven't seen anything about this, but I suspect that in a city, you're getting more people dating, you know, young women will go out on 2, 3, 4 dates a week.
With different men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course, I grew up in a small town. But
If dating is looked at as the process of learning about yourself and learning about men, mm-hmm. and it's not looked at as that you have to form an intimate relationship immediately with everyone that you go out with.
Exactly.
Then it makes sense.
It does.
To date more
makes good sense.
Men. Yeah.
In fact, it's a privilege and an honor to be able to do that. And I think this is one of the things I really appreciated about her book, is that, you know, again, she does make it into something that you have to look forward to.
Yes.
Something that's actually going to be a benefit to you. Because for a long time, you know, there was an anti-dating trend. Nobody wanted to date anymore. In fact, when I was growing up, you know, when I was in college in the early 70s, and I was a hippie, well, nobody dated. The word date was outdated. And then
you hung around in groups of just friends, right?
Well, we hung around in groups, and we did what Monica was just saying is best not to do. You know, you get intimately involved with somebody. And I mean, also, the early 70s was, you know, enmeshed in the sexual revolution. So mm-hmm. we were all pawns in the game.
Yeah.
Hartley told me that when she, you know, she went through a lot of heartbreak in her single years and finally realized that she didn't know what she was doing in terms of relationships. She told me that when I was done with the experience of broken hearts, I decided to have a do-over. Mm-hmm. At the time, she was a departmental director at a top company in Manhattan, and she was used to researching to find the solution. And so she set out to research this problem and come up with a solution. And the knowledge in Inspired Dating came from her personal experiences and self-referral. Her first step was she resolved not to become attached to any one man and to date many men and to keep a calendar that scheduled work and romantic time and never throw her life out the window for a guy. You know, never change her plans for a guy. You know, just have her life be her life, and dating be this fun exercise.
Part of it, but not the main
right.
thing. Okay.
Right.
And she said the guys were actually impressed by that, you know, because they could line up for her.
Yeah.
They could wait for her. In a sense, it made her more valuable.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so she, using that process, those principles, she found the perfect man and married him, perfect for her,
mm-hmm.
married him, and decided that if she could help other people achieve that same thing, she really wanted to try and help. She also, Hartley also has she's the president of Chamberlain Hart Enterprises, and among her clients have been hundreds of individuals and businesses, including the International Office of Pete Marwick, the State of New York. She has a bachelor's degree in communications from Emerson College and a master's degree in counseling psychology from Norwich University, and she has worked as a individual counselor too. And so she was, you know, helping her individual women clients with some of these issues and realized that there really was a need for this information.
Universal, and so, yeah.
And she spent 10 years working on the book.
10 years writing the book,
yeah.
Working on it.
Mm-hmm. And now she's working on one with her husband for men. Great.
Oh, very good. Do you think men read these books as much as women do?
No.
Not as much.
But some.
But some do.
And I think they're interested, and I think they'll listen to what the women are having to say about them. I only know one guy, a friend's husband, who didn't want to have anything to do with any of it. He was very self-determined. Mm. He felt, you know, he is the way he is. He's, you know, he doesn't want to learn from anyone else. And that was possibly true for him. And if it wasn't, nobody would ever find out.
And he was already married.
He was already married. Happily married.
Happily married. So I guess that worked for him. So let's take a little brief musical break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Writers' Voices and our guest, Hilary Kurtz. Welcome back to Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn and our guest, Hilary Kurtz. We've been discussing relationship books. We've been talking about Inspired Dating by Hartley Bishop, a local author, and that book's available at local bookstores. And
so what I'm seeing here is the trends that are going on in 2007 are going in two directions, it sounds like, from all these commentaries at Yahoo Personals by these experts. It seems like some of them are saying, you know, the internet is growing and it needs to, improve the way people get matched. And on the other hand, there's people saying, no, we want more face-to-face. I'm trying to find one of them in particular.
And there's people that are saying we don't really need to be in a couple relationship. We can be perfectly happy on our own.
Yeah. So these experts were asked, what's ahead for romance and relationships in 2007? And here's some of the replies. Trend, more dates, predicts Nancy Slotnick. People are craving the intimacy that only a face-to-face date can bring. So singles will date more often and challenge themselves to text less, meet more.
Mm.
And she's the author of Turn Your Cab Light On, Get Your Dream Man in 6 months or Less.
Okay.
You pick one, Monica.
Okay, well, I like what Jen Scheft says, who wrote... is the author. She was the winning bachelorette for the fourth season of The Bachelor and is the author of Better Single Than Sorry, A No-Regrets Guide to Loving Yourself and Never Settling. She says people are learning that they can thrive even when they're not coupled up. I think that many will become smarter daters. They'll want to find the right partner rather than stay involved with someone who's just fine for right now.
Okay.
You know, talking about finding the perfect person. There is no perfect person.
Amen.
I mean, everybody has faults, and everybody has sometimes faults that really grate on you. The trick is to overlook those and, you know, concentrate on the good and the things that appeal to you, right?
And the trick is to choose a person whose faults are things that they may grate on you, but they aren't at odds with who you are as a human being.
Right, right.
Yeah.
A guy named Evan Mark Katz says online dating finally matures. Seniors get comfortable with it. Divorcees fully embrace it. And the 20 and 30-something players stop playing and start getting serious.
Wow. This year, it's not about marriage, says Lissa Coffey, but it is about commitment and monogamy. Coffey's a dating and relationship expert and the author of What's Your Dosha Baby, which definitely caught our eye, because it is about the Ayurvedic
approach.
The Ayurvedic approach to dating.
Although I went to her website and I really didn't find anything specifically about that.
Well, the book, I read a little review of her book, and it said, what did it say? Well,
so did hidden sneak coffers.
It said that this was an Indian person, an Indian origin person writing, who knew something about Ayurveda, said, I would recommend this book to anyone who's curious to get some exposure to Ayurveda and its concepts. It is a light reading. But after reading this book, you may be inspired to do more serious reading on Ayurveda. If you're very new to Ayurveda like me, this should be your first book. So she's talking, I believe, about the Vata Pitta Kapha, how they interact, how somebody who's primarily Vata would interact with someone who's primarily Pitta. And I think for everyone, knowing that information could be useful, but I don't know how much knowledge she really has.
Okay, what else do we have here?
Well,
with the competition for dates rising online, singles will need to be bolder in their profiles to invite more responses, says Liz Kelly. Watch for the more creative headlines, interesting short stories, and funny photographs. More singles will also post voice and video greetings online as this technology takes off in 2007. And, of course, we don't have to tell the younger people about the websites that are set up, like MySpace and is that the video one?
YouTube is the video.
Yeah. But so more and more people are getting to know each other through their own creative efforts, it sounds like.
But there is a lot of falsification, too. There was one in here where they were talking about people getting tired of the kind of exaggerations and
right,
lies.
You're hearing that from some friends who've tried this online. And
yeah, what about the Dateline catching the predators online?
I mean,
if you have kids, you really have to be watchful. You have to be very...
That's
true. Very vigilant about this, because the internet is great, but it also brings dangers.
One of these trends also was that people who are on it just to find a kind of a quick partnership, sex basically, that there's sites now that are just for them, and they're starting to not be as prevalent on the sites that are looking more for relationships.
That's great.
Yeah, that's good.
So
it
to
is.
Each their own.
Just call it what it is and,
exactly.
Clear the way for those who want
something
this
more.
Versus that.
MySpace isn't really a dating, it's a social networking site that people can be on just to communicate with friends and to share their pictures and so forth. And I put a page up because my kids, who are in their 20s, both had pages, and you can't look at other people unless you have one too. And I started getting bizarre emails from people based on my profile in there.
Well, I'm extremely shy when it comes to any online posting. I've never done it. I mean, I tried going on cartalk.com yesterday just to talk about my car. And when I saw that my name was included, I just, me out of here. So I'm someone who's, done the research, but never really jumped in. I have a built-in feeling that, what works for me is meeting somebody face-to-face.
Well, it works for you, then that's what you should.
But I'll tell you something. I have great appreciation for the people who have opened up their hearts and been able to write tomes about themselves online, because it helped me. It helped me see that people don't mind expressing who they are and what they want.
Well, it probably helps them to know themselves too.
It can be kind of fun, and it can be. I tried eHarmony for a while, and that's the one where they send you matches. And the thing that I didn't like about that, they have this whole process where you get a match and you can close the match at any time, and either party can close the match, and then you can't communicate anymore. So it's the security issues, the safety issues are dealt with pretty well mm-hmm. on eHarmony. But the thing that I didn't like about it is that most of the matches were people that I knew just from reading their profile that I'd have no interest in. And I didn't like having to reject so many people. Hmm. You know, I felt badly about closing the matches, especially if you had gone through, like, the first step after you get a match is you send each other your lists of must-haves and can't-stands. And then if those... if those seem to work, then you send each other these brief essay questions and you answer the questions. And you don't actually get to the place where you're communicating openly until several steps. But if you've gone down several steps and then you reject somebody, or somebody rejected me, and I have no idea why, I have no idea. Like, if someone rejects me immediately without ever communicating at all, and I have no idea why, I didn't find that very comfortable, and I didn't like doing it to other people either.
Right, right.
So it's in normal dating circumstances, you can give off signals to let people know that you are or aren't interested, and you don't have to, you know, say no all the time.
Goodbye.
So we're getting really short on time. So do you have one last thing, or do you want to talk a little more about Dr. Paul?
Well, I know I want to look into what Dr. Paul is up to. His system, you know, I don't know if I've embraced his system yet, which is about identifying yourself as a queen or king, a warrior, a magician, or a lover. Both men and women do this identifying and then match accordingly. And there's so many ID systems now, and they do help us think about who we are, but you still have to be spontaneous in, you know, in many of the aspects of getting to know somebody.
Yeah, I always have a problem with having boxes to put people
sure,
in.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
But, you know, I think the box can expand, and I think it's valuable.
As they say, think outside the box.
Valuable psychology. let's see. Okay. Well, he says, every one of us has a story to our lives. None of it is entirely random, since our choices had us in all new directions in life every time we make them. It is the same thing that happens in a great romance novel or a romantic comedy. So he was sort of imploring people to look at themselves as a character, you know, and develop their character.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But he does have great, great psychological powers to get into people's heads, and I've read a lot of the letters that people have sent them, and they really do respond to his wisdom.
We can do another whole program.
And I believe you mentioned something that Hartley is getting good responses now from her book.
She is. She's starting to get letters like, thank you so much, I'm engaged, I'm getting married. She's been invited to some weddings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's very fun. So who is our guest next week? Carolyn.
Next week we have John Ong, and this group of people have written book their memoirs, and they put them together in a book, and it's going to be great.
I think it's called Being Our Own Heroes. It's the title of the book, so that's who we have next week. And Hillary, thank you so much for joining us today on Writers' Voices. And we'll close with the quote from Carolyn.
The teacher asked the pupils to tell the meaning of loving kindness. A little boy jumped up and said, well, if I was hungry and someone gave me a piece of bread, that would be kindness. But if they put a little jelly on it, that would be loving kindness.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.